And thank you very, very much indeed. Now, between trade wars and trade deals, Republican rallies and Democratic debates, it's been a busy news week in America. And joining me for a recap, so to speak, now is Suzanne Lynch, Washington correspondent with the Irish Times, who's on the phone, by the way, not in studio. Suzanne, if President Trump were watching the Democratic debates, he just might fancy his chances for a second term.
Yes, Marion. I think in terms of Republicans' response, this Democratic debate this week, this is the second one to take place, with a lot of positive developments, I think, for Republicans, because what we saw was 20 candidates over two nights in Detroit, Michigan. And really, it ended up being a kind of a public display of antagonism about Democratic politics. Very few new ideas about how Democrats were going to beat Donald Trump. And no real winner from that debate. Now, what we see with Donald Trump, he's a man that we can read a lot from his tweets. And we know from a lot of his Twitter activity over the last few months that the candidate he is most worried about, it seems, is Joe Biden. That's the former vice president, the vice president under Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Joe Biden has been the front runner in all polls. He's over 30%. It's still not huge, but he's well ahead of the other candidates running. But what we've seen in the last two debates is that he's essentially underperformed. So I think there's a lot of relief coming from the White House that maybe Joe Biden is not the man who's going to emerge as a candidate. They feel that, as I say, he is the person that could pose challenges for Donald Trump because they believe that he can appeal to those kind of working class white voters in states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, that really abandoned the Democratic Party in 2016 and voted for Trump instead. So what we've seen since the debate, and this has been happening the last few months, is that Donald Trump and other Republicans have been painting the Democrats as socialists. At every opportunity, they kind of highlight the more left-wing policies that a lot of the candidates espouse, and that's really what they want. They want a Democratic candidate to run as much to the left as possible so they can set themselves up as an alternative to that.
Right. I presume Sanders would fit that bill very well.
Yeah, and this is one of the ironies. Bernie Sanders, in one way, is the opposite to Donald Trump in terms of politics. He's the most kind of far-left candidate out there. But even this week, Donald Trump gave a rally a day after the debate. And during that rally, he talked about healthcare and he talked about how pharmaceutical drugs are cheaper in Canada. And this was nearly exactly what Bernie Sanders had said during the debate. So you could see Donald Trump actually mimicking Sanders. And Bernie Sanders, who is still very annoyed that the Democrats chose Hillary Clinton, he has always argued that voters, Democratic voters in those key states like Michigan, Wisconsin, actually he was more popular in those states than Clinton. And he's kind of got a point there. But the debate for Democrats, like it was in 2016, was, look, he's too far left to win the popular vote. And we're getting that same kind of debate now that people are saying to people like Sanders. And Elizabeth Warren, who's another version of Sanders, if you like, and who's doing better in the polls. She's a very impressive candidate, very strong on policy.
Remind our listeners who she is.
Yeah, so she's a senator from Massachusetts. And she is, like many of them, got a nickname from Donald Trump, which suggests that he's worried about her. He has called her Pocahontas because she's been embroiled in a bit of controversy about her inheritance, claiming a Native American inheritance. But that overshadowed her campaign at the beginning, but she seems to have ridden that out. But she's doing very well in polls. She's a pretty much like Bernie Sanders in terms of economic policies. She's very left-wing. She talks about putting a tax on high earners. She talks about Medicare for All. That's a whole government sponsored healthcare system. And she's very, very clued into the Harvard professor on the big banks, how American society is rigged for big companies, big corporations. She's refused to take donations from big corporations and instead is depending on, you know, small donations from individuals. She is doing very well and is one to watch. And interestingly, Donald Trump mentioned her in his rally on Thursday night. So I think they're keeping an eye on her. Now, whether she has got the kind of name recognition, the political razzmatazz, if you like, to win the nomination is kind of unclear. But she definitely emerged as one of the strongest candidates this week during the debate.
OK, and introduce us to the others.
Well, there's a few more people who are kind of at the top. So there's kind of a breakout group of about five or six. Kamala Harris. She shot to fame during the last debate in Miami because she took on Joe Biden about his record on race relations. And this became the standout moment of the first debate in June in Miami. So this week, as luck would have it, they were drawn in the same group. So they were back on stage again. They were in the second night, it was divided over two nights. And she was standing beside Joe Biden. So in a sense, it was like a rematch between the two. Now, Joe Biden did a lot better this time. He came out a bit more aggressive. He took on her and other candidates on their records. And she came under a bit of pressure for her own experience on criminal justice. She's the former attorney general in California. But as some of the other candidates, not Joe Biden, but Tulsi Gabbard, who's a former military member, she really took on Kamala Harris quite well. And Harris was on the back foot on that. And the second thing was her position on healthcare. That's a huge issue for people here in America, those bread and butter issues.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris has come under pressure for being kind of ambiguous about this. She's flirted with the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren idea that everybody will have healthcare to be government funded. But the problem in America is that a lot of people, millions of people, are very happy with the private health insurance they have. Yes, they feel that the American health system is broken and needs to be changed. But when it actually comes to it, a lot of ordinary American middle-class people do not want to give up their health insurance. So she was coming under pressure there because she was kind of speaking out of both sides of her mouth. And I think that did her damage on Wednesday night. She was still pretty good and she's still up there as a big candidate. But Joe Biden took her on a lot more. The other person I think did very, very well in the debates was somebody called Cory Booker. He's a senator from New Jersey, very well respected here in Washington, and the only other African-American candidate along with Kamala Harris. He did very well. He took on Joe Biden on a few issues on race, and Joe Biden kind of shot back at him on criminal justice. But they had quite an interaction, but Cory Booker came across as measured, as poised. He took on Joe Biden without being disrespectful. So that, I think that was a challenge for all candidates, because we do respect the Obama administration and figures like Joe Biden. But he did very well, so I think he's one to watch over the next few months.
There was somebody writing today, I think it was in the Sunday Times, about President Donald Trump and the kind of coverage he got when he was kind of looking for the nomination 4 years ago, or more than 4 years ago, and it's not going to happen, couldn't possibly happen, not a chance, you know, buffoon. It is a little bit like the speech that is used a bit about Boris Johnson. Then he not only gets the nomination, he wins. And it looks like he can do no wrong in the eyes of his supporters. He delivers on promises.
Yeah. I was there in Michigan this week for the debate. I went outside Detroit and met supporters around the state. And this state of Michigan kind of epitomizes the success of Donald Trump. It hadn't voted for a Democratic president since 1988. Big kind of union place. The car industry had really failed there around the Detroit area. And Donald Trump won that by 10,000 votes. It was a tiny victory out of a population of about 10 million. But I went and I spoke to people, and the people I spoke to who are Trump supporters were very, very supportive of the president. They leapt to his defense. The issue of his recent racist tweets and taunts towards Democratic congresswomen, one of whom comes from Detroit, is one of the local congresspeople there. He got complete sympathy among the Democrats, the Republicans I spoke to, who said they kind of blamed Democrats for making it into a racist war. They said, oh, this has nothing to do with race. You know, he's just being patriotic. They also are not surprised by his behavior. They said, look, this is what we knew we were getting, someone who's going to talk out and talk straight and not going to back down. The economy is a very strong card for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's been doing very, very well. Now, there are some problems that could be on the horizon there, but at the moment, he keeps saying, and technically it's true that, you know, African Americans have had the best employment record since he took office. Like a lot of things with Donald Trump, he got lucky on that. I mean, a lot of the, obviously, the economic changes were made well, put in train well before he was elected. But I think that's always an advantage going in to elections. And also, this electoral college system in the US, as I explained there in Michigan, all he needs to do is win these few flips, you know, these swing states. And yes, in one sense, in Michigan, where I went, there's a huge activism on the Democratic side. And in the midterm elections last year, Democrats did very, very well. But that's different than a national election. And just as Democrats are going to be motivated to turn out, so are Republicans. And Donald Trump, I went to one county that went for Donald Trump, one small bit just outside Detroit. And last time the election, Donald Trump visited there 2 days before the election, and he managed to win that county. And some analysts think that that county, along with other two in the whole of the United States, won the election for Trump. So they're very, very good at pinpointing exactly where they need to get their vote out.
Right.
I think we're going to be seeing that again in 2020.
Okay, Ray Bassett, I presume, since you lived on the other side of the border there for so long, that you followed the US politics keenly.
Very, very much so. In fact, right through the campaign that eventually resulted in President Trump becoming president, we had saturation debates all the time, and every rule book was thrown out because nobody predicted that Donald Trump was going to do it. I think there's a difficulty on the Democratic Party side is that, you know, to win the Democratic nomination, you're going to have to appeal to a certain group of people who are in that party and register with. When it comes to the election then, you're going to have to go for a broader range. So generally people tend to the left to win the nomination, yeah, then tend into the middle without giving too much hostages for fortune. I think it's just so early to tell who's going to win, but generally the front runners don't in this contest.
Gail?
Yeah, I think the debate's really interesting, as Suzanne has touched on there. And it was a conscious decision by the Democratic National Committee to have them this time because they felt Clinton was preordained in 2016 and they felt Trump got a lot of coverage from the debates in 2016 and in 2015. The field will narrow significantly in September. There, you know, you have to be getting 2% in the polls and 130,000 individual donors. So there's only 7 or 8 of them, those names that Suzanne Lynch mentioned, Harris, Booker, etc. And we're 15 months out. And there's a long history in the United States of, once you become the ordained candidate for the Democrats or the Republican Party, of pivoting. You race back to the centre. And so I don't think the debates are as damaging as people might think.
You don't. One of the things that Donald Trump says over and over and over again, Jim Power, you know, is that the economy is flying, Wall Street is at an all-time high. Well, maybe that took a little shift recently. Employment is fantastic. And he's never really challenged on debt.
No, he's not, because, the US debt-to-GDP ratio is about 105%. The European average is about 86, 87.
Right.
So there is a significant debt problem. But it's not a problem in the sense that they will just keep rolling over that debt. And for the US to issue treasuries is never a problem. Debt isn't the big issue here. And in fact, you know, one of the things that contributed to that significant increase in debt over the last couple of years was his corporate tax package, which has fed into the economy story, which has fed into the employment story.
Right.
So, to be perfectly honest, I think it's his to lose. And I think the economy, you know, is likely to slow down over the next couple of years. But one of the things, which is bad for the economy is his protectionist agenda. You know, he announced last week that further 10% tariffs going on Chinese goods on the 1st of September, unless the Chinese step up to the plate and do something.
He was joking about Mercedes-Benz and 25%.
Exactly. So yeah, that damages global trade. It damages the US economy. But on the other hand, he will argue, you know, I said in my election campaign I was going to take on free trade. I was going to take on those who are engaging in unfair trade practices. And he's doing that. So I actually think this protectionist agenda will further feed into his popularity. And I just don't see anything on the Democrat side capable of taking him out at this stage.
Susanna?
Yeah, I'd agree with that on trade. I think, being honest, that is one issue that Donald Trump has quite a bit of support for on the Democratic side, even, that there is a sense in, you know, with globalization has failed a lot of people, and that the rise of China has to be reined in some way, particularly their exploitation of intellectual property and other issues. So he has got some support for what he's doing in China, even though it's a risky strategy in terms of destabilizing global trade, and they're the two biggest economies in the world, so there's a lot to play for. But people like Chuck Schumer, he's the top Democrat in the Senate, a New York Democrat, he has tweeted to Donald Trump, you know, don't back down against China. So it's the one area where he is getting some support. And in saying that, I have to agree with Jim there. What was interesting during the Democratic debate this week was that the trade issue became a debate. And Bernie Sanders, correctly, said that he was one of the only people to oppose NAFTA. That was a free trade agreement introduced during the Clinton, Bill Clinton era, between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And of course, Joe Biden came into for huge criticism for his kind of trade policy. So you could almost imagine Donald Trump watching this, saying, this is perfect. These Democrats are fighting over trade policy.
Yeah,
and he did not stand up for the American worker. Mm. Now, look, it's quite simple. Donald Trump's attitude to a lot of things are simplistic, including trade. So he's obsessed with the trade deficit in goods, where it's actually much more important. Global trade is much more about services, for example. But I think on the specific issue of China, you know, he does have a point there. What's worrying for people like in Ireland, for example, is that if he turns his attention now to Europe. So I've heard some people saying here that, you know, it's all about China and they're revising the NAFTA agreement between Mexico and Canada. He's trying to get that through Congress. So that's what it's all about at the moment. But if he starts looking at Europe more seriously, I know there was a beef deal announced on Friday that he announced with much fanfare. And I know a lot of the Irish constituents are not too happy about that. But what Europe is worried about more broadly is that he could slap tariffs on car makers from Europe. And that would be pretty significant.
Okay.
So at the moment it's China and Mexico, but it could turn to other folks.
It could turn to anyone. It would appear as a kind of a scary thing. Just last question on that, and then I want to go to the shootings last night. On the politics, Daniel.
Yeah, I'm fascinated, obviously, given there's no greater sport than Democrats bashing each other, you know, and I think it's manna from heaven for Trump because, you know, he can sit back and watch them. Like, I've never been particularly impressed by Joe Biden, I have to say. Like, I mean, he was a kind of a bumbling sort of vice president, you know, he gaff prone, but there's no one else really there I see at the moment who can really stand up to Trump. Like, he has the incumbency of the presidency. He broke most of the rule book in terms of getting elected. He's broken most of the rule book in being president, and he's getting away with it so far. And I just don't think, you know, I know, so, I think Ed made the fair point, we're still a long way out, but as Jim said, it's his, very much his to lose.
And of course the other names will become household names in the meantime, I presume, over the 18 months now. Another tragic event in the States, two mass shootings, one in Ohio and another in Texas. Now, I don't know if these are final figures. 9 people have been killed, at least 16 injured in mass shootings. Tell us about it, Susanna.
Yeah, look, Saturday there was news here in the afternoon that there was a shooter, a live active shooting situation in a Walmart in a shopping centre in El Paso, Texas. And as the news came in, it emerged this is a very, very serious incident. El Paso is right on the border of Mexico. Beto O'Rourke, another candidate I didn't mention there, he is from that area and it's kind of become synonymous with the city in a sense. And it kind of symbolises this kind of border, how borders can work, that El Paso is a very, very high Hispanic community. It looks like a gunman, a 21-year-old white man, travelled from Dallas, which is about a 10-hour drive, to El Paso. He is now in custody. And frighteningly, there are investigations now into a manifesto that was published online minutes before the first 911 call alerted authorities to what was happening, talking about a Hispanic invasion of Texas, and talking about the need for kind of an all-white, getting rid of other people and for a more sustainable life. So this was mentioned by authorities. We haven't got 100% confirmation that he was the author of this, but that's where that seems to have happened. In Ohio, this has just come up overnight. There was a shooting event basically right in the centre of Ohio in an area where people go out and socialise in. And it looks like there are about 9 people injured, killed in that, and up to 26 now they're saying injured in that event in Ohio too.
But, you know, there's no budging, is there?
No. I mean, this is the thing, Marion. It's very depressing and very difficult to cover this story because you hear again and again these messages, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims.
Thoughts and prayers, over and over.
I've been here and it's terrible. I've covered these shootings in Las Vegas and Florida and, you know, nothing really is happening on gun culture in this country. And what actually happens in these situations is that gun ownership typically goes up after events like this because the thinking is, oh, we need to protect ourselves more. That generally happens. And we don't know yet, obviously, with this situation. Since the Florida Parkland shootings last year, that's when a gunman opened fire in a school in a suburb there in Florida, there were some moves for change. So Congress, a few months ago, introduced a new bill, the House of Representatives, on background checks. But this is stalled in the Senate. The Senate doesn't want to touch it. So that's one issue. But really in the United States, like a lot of policy issues here, a lot depends on what happens at state level. So different states have different moves. Florida did move, and it was one of the big gun-owning states, did move to kind of tighten up ruled, for example, increased the age at which you could buy big weapons from 18 to 21. And we saw some a serious shift, really, in the political climate there. But Texas, for example, where this latest shooting had happened, the governor, Greg Abbott, who's become the voice of this tragedy, I mean, he actually, he's a very pro-guns. He came in for a lot of criticism just a couple of years ago for tweeting that when the gun ownership figures came out, that he was embarrassed that Texas was behind California in terms of gun ownership, and he encouraged people to buy more guns.
Right.
He also said after the Parkland shootings, you know, the problem is not guns, it's hearts without God. So it's very difficult to see how this person and the leadership in Texas is actually going to do anything sufficient to address this.
There's a story in the Mail on Sunday today there's with a photograph of Naomi Campbell on the front of it and then further photographs inside. And they say, why did Naomi go to gun tycoon Herglock's mega party? Now, I wouldn't be too knowledgeable about guns, but I've read enough whodunits to know that a Glock is a gun. And all these people who object to the laws are all going to celebrate the birthday party.
Yeah, I mean, what has to be said here is the power of money and the power of the NRA, that's the National Rifle Association.
Yeah.
It's got huge political power in this country. And Greg Abbott, that quote I gave him was straight out of the NRA playbook. They're generally, you know, Republican voters. Donald Trump has spoken at their events, their annual events. So has Mike Pence. They're very much embedded in Republican politics here and have become increasingly so in the last few years. So I think the stranglehold they have is just huge. So what we will hear, we can almost write speaking points now, it'll all be about how guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Yeah.
But one of the issues with the shooting yesterday in Texas, why it was so difficult, that a lot of people in that shopping mall would have been carrying guns themselves. They have a policy where you can openly carry guns. Some states have a policy called concealed carry, where you can have guns, but you can't have them on display.
Yeah.
But Texas is a very open attitude to guns. So, you know, there were some witnesses who were speaking yesterday who said they actually were carrying weapons. And then when the police came at them, they had to say, we're not the shooter, it's somebody else. So this kind of chaotic situation.
Yeah, well, and
there,
if you think
armed of people.
Even the president saying that teachers should have guns, clearly the fact that those people had guns didn't protect the victims. Anyway, it's all very fascinating and it's all very interesting. And thank you very, very much indeed for joining us. That's Suzanne Lynch, Washington correspondent with the Irish Times, and we'll take a break.